We have a number of very interesting issues here, which I wish I knew all the answers to them. Okay, but in any case, we will try to go through them, and I'd just like to make two comments in general about a number of these issues here. That first of all, a lot of these issues don't have clear-cut yes-no as much as people would like to have and would like to give. There are a lot of things don't have clear-cut issues, and a lot of things can be said, especially in a public forum. Things can be said, some apply to some for each person, maybe a little bit different answer. And therefore, I'd be very happy if there's anything which I sort of may say in a general sense, and someone would like to discuss on a more specific issue for them, for the family, for the circumstances, because a lot of times these issues do change depending on a person's particular circumstances. Please feel free to come discuss on a one-by-one basis, on a one-to-one basis. Certainly it's easier to discuss in that context. Second of all, a lot of these issues, I'm sure many people have encountered and may have asked other shahs that have encountered, and I'm certainly welcome to hear from your experiences things that you may have heard, things that you may have that may have experienced, and I'd like if people will share. What I would like to try to do, and that's sort of the goal of this year, is to get a sort of guideline, some rules of thumb, towards dealing with many of these issues. Okay, I just start with a question which came up last week, and we do live here near Gedera, it's one of the nearest towns, close to Kiryat Malachi. The question came up last week, he pointed out that in Gedera, the Rabbanut does not have a Mahajan standard because the Rav of Gedera insists that you need a Mashgiach Midi to give a Mahajan Hashgacha, and none of the Batei Esek in Gedera are able to support a full-time Mashgiach, and therefore the Rabbanut in Gedera doesn't have a Mahajan department as most other Rabbaniot do. Therefore, the question became, so what does that mean? Does that mean that how reliable is the regular Rabbanut? And can the question similarly becomes, if someone does generally rely, does generally keep a Mahajan level, is there anything he can eat in Gedera? Okay, so there's going to be a shiur, Mitzvah Hashem, in a week or two. We'll discuss specifics more about the more local eateries. But let me just, again, take this as an example of a guideline over here. Okay, in the particular case of Gedera, I don't think I have to shut the tape. As the Rabbanus goes, it seems that overall they are pretty much on top of things. However, of course, this depends. There's a number of different mashgichim, as I said, some a little bit better than others. And it also depends very much, especially on a smaller shop, who the owner is. For example, there is a sort of a dry food store, dry food and beans and stuff like that. Someone who comes over a weekly shiur here in the Temani Shul, a religious person, and he comes, and even though it may not officially be in the Hajj, but he himself is very, very aware of kashrus and of halacha, and he comes and he'll tell you exactly this is not, this is a Mahajan, he's mafish again. So therefore, in a store like that, although it may not be formally Mahajan, the person there is very, very reliable, and there's certainly no problem buying with him. A person wants a Mahajan, he'll tell you, okay, this, you know, if you're mafra Mahajan, this is not for you, but this certainly you can. But in general, you can rely that the Trumas HaMaisis and stuff is very, very, is done properly. On the other hand, you can have a store which is owned by someone who's not religious and who's just, and this again, this is a general principle, again, I can't say specifically in terms of Gedera, but a person has to be aware that if you have a small restaurant in which the owner is not religious and does not really care, you know, personally so much about Tashas and just has a Tzuda because he knows there's no hotel, whatever, he needs to have it for his business, okay, in such a situation, then the possibility of something going wrong, or the possibility of his trying to sneak something in during off hours, is higher. And therefore, a person, in a certain sense, you need to use a certain degree of common sense as well when going to a store or going to an eatery, and just to say, well, it has this name on it, doesn't always, especially if you're talking about a kashrut regila, where the mashgiach is there less frequently, you need to rely more on the owner of the establishment. Okay, and therefore, you have these kinds of considerations have to be taken into account. It's not so easy to judge, okay? It also depends how many Arabs are floating around in the kitchen. Okay, yeah.
Can you rely more on a chain since they get their profit, you know, they...
Correct. And therefore, again...
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so yes, if you have a chain... If you have a chain, then it's more likely a lot of the stuff does come from the central, right? There is one of the pieces goes, so the stuff is all brought in. And if you're dealing with a chain, then again, the likelihood is going to be higher that you're going to have less problems because they are getting the stuff from a central warehouse. Many stores now do heat up. Okay, let's see, even many of the bakeries no longer bake their own cookies and cakes, but they get it frozen and they pop it in the oven and they heat it. So there is a lot of stuff. There's certainly something which is part of the chain or something which is more of a natural. You have a supermarket, for example, there's a Victory store there which has a fish department which gets fish from a very reliable source. So therefore, the law, and again, this is also a certain sense of rule of thumb, that the larger the establishment, the more likelihood that the rabbanut will give more mashkiach hours to that establishment. And if there are more mashkiach hours to the establishment, then again, the likelihood that there will be things to be more on top of are greater. A smaller establishment in which they can only give minimal hours of hashgacha to, the likelihood of something going wrong is going to be higher. So these are, we can't go into all the details. There happens to be if someone's interested, there is a restaurant in Baraka, which I believe is under the Zat Beit Yosef. I'm not 100% sure. I will check that in the coming week. I'll check that for the coming weeks. But there are, what? Baraka on Herzl in Gedera. And there are certain options even within Gedera. There is the bakery which is under a Mahajan Hashgacha. And so therefore there are certain places. Just going to the next question, with the question here in terms of three between Dimti and Mahajan, between meat and milk. The answer to this question is definitely. Okay, I really would like to give the shiur at the end after we discuss all the issues of kashrus and see what are the issues of kashrus in terms of meat products, what are the issues in terms of milk products, what are the issues in terms of mitzvahs ba'aretz, and what are the issues in terms of after we know all the have a sense of all what the options and what the halachas are, then it'll be a little bit easier to discuss whether it's what is significant, what is not significant, where is the mahajan, where is not the mahajan. However, to finish that, I'd like to let it go for a number of months. People are sort of pressed. I wanted to at least give some sort of guidelines already now. But clearly, in terms of milk, just in a very brief nutshell, the basic three issues between mahajan, non-mahajan, and milk is one is milk powder. Okay, the milk powder from chutz la'aretz is basically in terms of milking on Shabbos, and in terms of veterinary care. That's in terms of milk per se. Those are the three major issues. And the relatively lesser shilas then come up in terms of the meat issues. Again, so there can be other practices that come in. But overall, certainly the questions that come up, let's say in a milchaka restaurant, dimtin and mahajan, not mahajan, are certainly less significant. Are generally, as a rule of thumb, the difference is less problematic than some in a fleishik establishment where the stakes are much higher. Pardon the pun. Okay, and therefore there definitely is a difference between them, and it wouldn't be the person will say, well, can I decide I'll eat mahajan for this, but for this I will rely on the regular kashrus, and is that considered hypocritical? No, not at all, because the person has to understand when talking about mahajan what are the issues, and therefore it does make sense to say that for this where I know there's more of a concern I will be more careful, and for this where the issues are less, I can rely on the regular kashrus. So definitely there is a difference between them, and there is room to make such a distinction. Now, David, did you have something you want to? Okay. All right. What? Okay. Fine. All right. So this is, and then if we go into number four. Now, how bad, if I decide to go by Rabbanut standards, how bad can the mistakes be? Obviously, nothing is straight. Okay, I can't agree completely with this, okay, in the sense that when you talk about mistakes can happen, everything, and there can be real tafas. Not to say with Mahajan you can't have real tafas either, but I just want to scare people. I heard one story today, which just again, you want to know how bad can things be bad? Someone, Moshe Katz, who is involved in Kosherot, once went into a restaurant, I don't know whether it was Mahajan or not Mahajan, so that's why I'm covering the sense, and he saw a piece of meat there that wasn't properly labeled, and he started asking, what's going on here? and they basically issued him out of the kitchen. And turned out later it was donkey meat brought in from Shechem. Okay? So there can be real, okay? So there can be real issues, and unfortunately our friendly neighbors, our unfriendly neighbors, don't always cause security issues, they also cause us halachic issues. And therefore there can be, there can be, unfortunately, if there isn't proper supervision, there can be issues of real trade. We don't have to assume, okay, and this is, I think, perhaps what you if you go back to this, yeah, obviously nothing is trade. I don't think that the place has a hashgacha. I don't think we have to assume that there is, you know, donkey meat floating around there, okay? In that sense, I think we can generally rely that if there is a hashgacha, that it's the cheskas, we can assume that what is there is under kosher supervision. However, again, be aware that there can be things, and therefore, as I said, also you have to get a sense of what's going on, and if you, you know, and the person has to use a little bit of logic in addition to just, seeing something stand on the wall, it does help to have a little sense of whether you see this is a kind of establishment which, again, and that will depend on the neighbor, on the owner, and again, these are things that I can't, that can't be quantified.
What about the amount of not guilt, but the amount of the chumrah of the avera? If you go to an establishment that has got the stamp on and logically is okay, but still you ate donkey meat, do you bear the
okay,
the
so, okay, so this is a question of a person does an avera b'shogeg. Okay, so a person who did it, if he relied on the fact that there was a kashrus organization, there was a kashrus certification, so this would be a situation of shogeg. Okay, a person who doesn't have a shogeg also does require a certain amount of kapara. In Yom Kippur, we say, okay, we talk about shogeg and mezid. So there is a need for a kapara for shogeg as well. Obviously, it's less so than a person who does something to mezid. Right. There is, on the other hand, there is something called the call that there are different, even within shogeg, there are different levels of shogeg. There's shogeg, let's say a lot of times we're careless about something and end up doing something wrong. Okay, so if we're careless about it, it's called the shogeg karov le poshea, right? That you are being careless, right? On the other hand, something if you are being very careful and just by freak, you know, a very unusual accident, a freak accident something happened. So within that there are different levels, but
this is exactly what I'm saying. Is it would a real frum guy think that eating out altogether is bad because if you're not mashgiach yourself and
this is an excellent question. The question is eating out in general versus eating in a home. Okay, I have to say, look, in addition to the home cooking being the best cooking, of course. Okay, and but yes, there is, you know, from a kashrus perspective as well, home is also a safest, okay, because obviously, look, we know in the kitchen that you control of the pots and you control, and you know, every once in a while we find in our house, we find a mistake, we find a milk, like a spoon here and a fleshka thing here, something was put into the pot, we brought a pot and we realized that it wasn't there. Even at home, little things, little mistakes happen. However, within the home, the control is certainly greater. People who work in institutional kitchens, okay, can tell you all kinds of stories, which I'm not going to do, okay. But it's clear that a person who eats at home, there's much more control over the kashrus, and eating out exposes you to more of a possibility. So also at home, you don't have as much. You're not going to find, let's say, again, or the extreme. The likelihood of finding donkey meat in a house, right? Which is why, you know, Yashtar just wanted to save some money this week, she went to Shechem to go get some, to pick up a pack of donkey meat, is not just not going to happen in the house, where unfortunately in a restaurant, it can happen. So again, it's a person, there are people who don't eat out because they want to allow, or one of their guests will be only in certain places where they can know, because, again, but most people don't work that way. Most people don't expect it. We don't have to expect people not to eat out. If they go to a place which has a hashgacha, then they are allowed
That's
to
okay.
eat.
That's
okay.
Different way. The some avarot which are more severe and some which are less. Let's say if if you eat donk meat, it's d'oraita.
Right.
Milk and meat is also d'oraita.
Milk and meat, if it's cooked together.
Is it the same
milk and meat, if it's cooked together, is the same level.
Because if you're eating at home, you might do meat and
again,
milk.
Again, if you're eating at home, you might eat it's possible at home that you can have a mixture of meat and milk, but again, the likelihood of actually mixing together real meat with real milk with meat is less likely, I would assume, in a home setting, okay, unless there's a blackout and you can't see what you're doing, then it's going to happen in an institutional setting, where someone may just have accidentally poured something and not looked at the label properly,
or the Arab
who's in the kitchen may have decided, you know, hey, this would do well with a little bit. Okay, so again, that's
But normally in the kitchen you have either meat or milk in most places, and you can go to places which are only one brand, you know.
But most eateries don't have, for that reason, there are very few eateries that have both milk and flesh in the same establishment. Okay, that's very rare, but for good reason, because when you have two an eatery with both milk and flesh in the same proximity, the likelihood of mixtures sticking together is let's say, for example, in stores we have a milk and cheese department, and you'll have a meat department. Okay, a store which has a proper shop will make sure that these two departments are separate and far from one another, that they shouldn't be adjacent to one another, so therefore the likelihood of mixing up the knives, okay, should not happen. All right, so this is one of the things, again, is if you're going to a person buying from a store, one of the things to look is the store mapped that the two departments should not be adjacent, and therefore, or would they have precautions to make sure that the knives aren't accidentally mixed from one to the other. I'd like to go back, though, to a more basic question, and that is to what extent, which we discussed a little bit last week, but I'd like to go a little bit more this week into it with some sources, as to what extent should a person necessarily try to eat mahajan, and to what extent can a person just rely and say that he has the tzedakah kashrut, and therefore we're going to eat that, and that's it. Is there anything wrong with that at all? And to do that, I'd like, interestingly, to discuss it from, I have in the back a number of tshuvas from Moshe Feinstein, in which he discusses various kashrut issues. And what I found fascinating about the tshuva is, in addition to the particular kashrut issue, which we'll discuss as we go along throughout the course of the series, but in many of the tshuvas he discusses, in a certain sense, there are many paragraphs in which we can learn about this issue of mahajan. To what extent is it at all required? Is it a good idea? What is it? How do we? As I said, because sometimes you hear all extremes. Some people tell you it's just politics, right? Kaz all the same, the whole thing is mahajan, all the dots, and it's all the politics, they just want more money. And now, there is a certain degree of truth to it, in that there are issues of politics, there's sometimes issues of, and I was speaking, when I was away for Shabbos a week and a half ago, with Ariel, he was talking about he has a hashgacha on a certain factory, a potato factory. He says the Mashiach comes in for 1 hour, and he goes through the records, and he's mastered Shumas and Maestas as he needed, and an hour a day, and he's able to do the work, and that's fine. Another hashgacha which has a mashgiach all day, sits for 8 hours and says tehillim. Okay, so again, it's true that you may be. So sometimes there is an issue which may not necessarily. This may be a principle, and again, maybe in that particular potato factory, I don't know how many. You know, maybe you don't actually need a constant mashgiach to oversee a potato factory. But again, it could be a part of a principle that they want to have. As I said, they may feel that in order to give a certain hashgacha, their standard hashgacha, they want to have a hashgacha on premises. If he has new systems, they feel more days, that's fine. So, should the potatoes come out? Well, I don't know. Okay, but there are other situations, and sometimes you'll find that if you look on some of the, I heard a story about one hashgacha which they want to bring in some meat from a different, very, very large hashgacha. I said, no, we don't use that one. I'm sort of astounded because I don't want to get into this particular name, but it was a very, very well accepted hashgacha. I was sort of surprised. Yeah, there can be, I don't know exactly what to use, and they may have had one certain chumah this way, another one did a chumah that way, they daven with a grass. I don't know what it was, but there may be sometimes that is a small basis. Also, I know there was a time, and I've got to check the tales on this, but the Rabbanut Mahajan meat would only allow a store that had Rabbanut Mahajan meat, again, as a principle, and therefore you have situations where if they wanted to have Beis Yosef meat, then they wouldn't be able to get, because so there are certain issues that do have to do with politics. Or, on the other hand, to say that all the Mahajan is just politics, as you saw last week, it's certainly not true. There are many issues, both in terms of machlokism and in terms of the presence of the mashgiach. There is a lot of reality, not necessarily all of it, or within, but certainly if we talk about mahajan as very cautious, there definitely are differences. On the other hand, you have people who say everything is trace, because as you said, you don't know what's going on in the kitchens, and everything is on kimi. And also, I think that's not a proper approach, and we don't have to. There's no reason to assume that. And therefore, I think that the basic approach, which I think we'll see also in Snigris Moshe, I think that a person, the kashrus should be taken as it is, that a person, tzudas kashrut, a person who wants to follow the Rabbanut, gives a hashgacha, they are providing food which is kosher, and a person who eats that is fine, he's in the midst of kashrus, and he can rely on that. Another person who wants to be more careful, definitely it is a chumrah which definitely has justification. Therefore, there is what to require in terms of doing so. And with that, I'd like to see, for example, here, Moshe has here a number of chuvas where he talks about in terms of milk, in terms of Chol Yisrael, which is very relevant for all of us. We all have this struggle. We're still struggling somewhat, but after 13 years, it's less of an issue for us. An issue in terms of Chol Yisrael, people going back and forth, are they back in the States or England, or people bring you stuff, right? What is it here? It really isn't such an issue, but what about all the stuff which comes from the States or England or West South Africa, whatever it may be? So if Moshe here is a tshuva, this is one of his first tshuvas here on the issue of Chalav Yisrael, and he talks about Var Chalav Shel HaKompanies. I was going to transliterate it, but it's more fun to see it in Hebrew. He talks about the Chalav Shel HaKompanies B'mdinatenu, Asher Yesh Pikoach HaMemshala, there is government supervision, V'im Yavu Chalav V'im Atmea Ye'anshu, if they mix in trace milk, they'll be punished, the company will be punished, V'im Eskirat Ha'esek Shalom, they'll be closed, Shalachem V'adi Mirtim, L'arevi Yesh Tam Gadol La'atir, and if the people will be afraid to mix it in, which is a very good reason, and it goes into a whole halacha discussion, which we are not going to get into now, when we get to it, we'll discuss the halachic aspect to it. Rav Moshe continues at the end, V'zeh Hu Gam L'chulei Alma. He feels that this reason is not just a v'di'eved, a b'shas hatchak, a dachuk reason, right, someone which is open to machlok, and he says this reason he feels is an absolutely good, valid reason, which everyone should agree to, de'ein tam lachlok bazeh. There's no reason to argue about it. V'lachen, harotel esmoch lakel yesh lo tam gadol, v'rashay. Person wants to rely on this, it's a good heter, and it can be relied upon, and a person does so, it's fine. וכמו שמקלים בזה הרוב בני אדם שומרי תורה וגם הרבה רבנים וחס השום למה שעושים שלא כדי. Okay, right? It says that most people, okay. Interesting, right? It's the Russian of Mekilin, and it says most people and Rabbanim, and it's perfectly fine. אבל, מכל מקום לבעלי נפש, people who want to be extra careful, מן הראוי להחמיר. It's proper to be machmir. ואין בזה משום יורה. And is not considered being a biksha. V'gam ani lehig lachmir l'atzmi. Says, I myself do so. Ava mishu atzal haker, who ose kadina, v'ein lachshivo kim zalzel b'yisrin. So you have here a beautiful presentation by Moshe Feinstein in terms of how to approach this issue of mahajan. Rav Moshe says that there is a solid basis for what's done. It is kosher. You can rely on it. Many people rely on it, amongst them Rabbanim. However, a person who wants to be, and therefore a person who does so should not be looked down on in any way. Yerashai, he is allowed to rely on it. However, a person who wants to be extra careful can do so, and he himself says that he does so. Okay? He has another tshuva. We'll skip that. We'll come back to the other paragraph in a few minutes. He has in the second tshuva. He again had a shaila question came up from a school. He had a question from a school about they wanted to know in the school should they bring in Chalav Yisrael, which is more expensive, or should they bring regular milk in? So Rav Moshe again, B'dvachav HaKompanis, Shem Dinotena, Shubi'arti, B'sefer, Rav Moshe, Shaleke, Yisr, Chalav Shel Chav Akum, V'en Yisrael, there's no problem. Aval Mikon, Komer, Baal Nefesh, Lachmir, Shetam, Nizeh, Vadai, Ru'ui, V'minahale, Yeshivas, Ketana, Shiyitnu, Talmidim, Chalav, Shel HaKompanis, Shamidim, Yisraelot, Chaliva. He says, Ini Yeshiva, Rav Moshe writes, here it's proper to do so. Vavshu b'yokem at, shav yeshiva olet asach badolim, that's a little bit more, and if you multiply that by buying in a house, okay, so it's an extra, I don't know, it's an extra couple of shkolim a week, or in the States, an extra couple of cents, you know, 20 cents more. You're trying to buy for a whole yeshiva, it becomes a significant amount. V'meshach hashanav matzav shav yeshiva dachuk b'shinim elo, that's the yeshiva budget, right, does not have a lot. Shavashuzem mekilim be'ez yeshivot mikom mokom. Kedai lachmir ki gam zehu menyanei chinuch. Rav Moshe says that there's an aspect here of chinuch, and besides the halachic issue itself, there is a certain chinuch aspect to this issue of being mahader for Chalav Yisrael. L'sheidu shekadai v'ra'ur l'bnei Torah lachmir af k'sheyesh rak chashash yisrael. That even, right, the idea, a part of the idea of eating mahadrin is not just for the specifically local issue of this piece of meat or this particular food, but it's part of a comprehensive chinuch issue, and therefore we felt particularly for a school, for a yeshiva, there's room to be careful about this, because it trains people that you have to be careful about mitzvahs. You can't just assume, just take anything and take everything for granted, but a person has to be more careful in terms of issues of chinuch. And even if there's only a slight concern, still we try to make the effort to make sure that there shouldn't be a problem. By doing so, people will learn how to be careful in other areas of halach, where the issues may be more serious. A person says, "Ooh, you know, we don't do everything. We try to be careful about this." Will already learn that in everything, in all way of life, they need to ask a shayla, they need to discuss, they need to try to be careful about potential issues. The point of yeshiva is to educate people in Yiras Shamayim. So Moshe says, look, how much do we spend, how much does a person spend to send his kids to a private yeshiva? Okay? A lot of money to send people to a private yeshiva. Okay, and so when it comes to part of the issue of a chinuch is also on the home level, in terms of the yeshiva itself, part of the training that the yeshiva offers to its students is by being more careful about kashrus. The yeshiva is giving a message to students that you can sit there and, you know, often, you know, talk about, you can lecture and lecture and lecture, but if your actions are not necessarily in consonance with the message you're trying to give, you can give a whole lesson in terms of in a school about the importance of being careful about mitzvot, but if the students see that the school is not particularly careful, then all those lessons don't have the same meaning. But if the school makes an extra effort, put in the money to be more careful about in terms of what they have, that will have a tremendous educational benefit as well. But if you live in a place where a town where there is no chalav yisrael available, okay. Food of our kasher mod asik chalav yisrael ebishat chaliva af laichidim ein lahem lachmi. But if it's a place where it's definitely difficult to get, okay, they don't have readily available, then he says there's no need to be lachmi. And here again we see two very, very important points in terms of Rav Moshe writes here. That beyond that, as I mentioned, beyond this specific issue of is this kosher, is this not kosher, there is a certain educational value in trying to yimachar on mahajan. Again, this also leaves room to a certain flexibility. A person who's not may decide that on some things, or at least in the house. Again, there are different possibilities. As from an educational perspective, there is certain value depending on the ability and the availability of time. For a person that has it, often you have it on the shelf, you have two products that are very similar. This comes back to the next, third issue. I'll just give for 1 second, I'm going to go to the fourth one. The fifth. He talks about eggs, okay? He talks about eggs that are, eggs that have a blood spot in them. Okay, so the eggs have blood spot in them. Right? The halach is if there's a possibility of developing chicken inside the egg, so obviously the egg is treif and the whole egg has to be thrown out. If on the other hand it's an egg which was there are no roosters there, it's just an egg which is in no way fertilized, and therefore the blood just made its way in there, but nothing is developing. So such a situation, the eker din, you'll have to just take out the blood and use the remainder of the egg. Rabbi Moshe writes at the end about, and even though he found out in some farms they do have some eggs, that they do have some roosters floating around, but it's a very small percentage, and he says there's no need to, we can follow the rule, there's no need, me'ik ha'din, to be concerned about it. But Rabbi Moshe writes in Avala Maaseh, the last line, Kevin to the Beitza, Monachshav, the Ruba, the Inshi have stayed klal. For most people, what is an egg cost? Okay, egg that was 79 cents a dozen and it was on sale. Okay, 79 cents a dozen on sale, comes out for it's more now, it is a little bit more. Okay, I'm trying to say it's probably also more now. Okay, but it says for most people, an egg is not such a, it's not such a significant, it's a relatively minimal amount. Again, Moshe gives us another principle, that if it's something is a very, very minimal difference, something which is almost a minimal loss, let's say an egg, which isn't such a big deal, so therefore of Moshe writes over here, that it's in such a situation, even again, the halacha should follow the majority, and therefore there's no real iser al pidin. However, there's room to be careful and to throw out the whole egg because it's such a small hefset. And therefore, again, so this is something to consider that a person. The issue is to throw the egg away, just to take out. He writes that if you know, throw out the blood.
Company that industrializes and uses a whole bunch of eggs.
Right.
At some point.
No, he's talking about if a person finds a blood spot in the egg. What does he do with it? What did he do with the egg? So it said in the normal setting that the eggs are coming from farms or the egg farms that have only chickens. So me'ikah hadin, it would be enough just to take out the splat of blood and the rest of the egg can be used. Okay, but he says that if, again, in a liquid, for example, would that make a difference? What happens if, for example, and this does come up often, let's say, for example, part of the egg you use is, often you check the egg first, and then you dump it into the rest of the egg, and you dump it into the cake. What happens if you started cracking it and already have 10 eggs sitting in the bowl already, or you already dumped it into the whole batter, and therefore something will come up? So then here, again, where a person has to know, then it's a, what, I'm sorry? Right, so then already you're dealing with a much more significant hefted because you're already halfway through the cake, and therefore in such a situation, then it would be appropriate to rely on minot. So these are issues that a person has, again, Rav Moshe has another issue, and this is and it comes back to some of the other questions in terms of family, and in terms of the guests, and in terms of other stuff like that. Rav Moshe has an issue about blended with whiskey, right, the fourth issue. Where he talks about, again, how the whole discussion, Tais from Elizabeth wanted to have a hashgacha on whiskey, and he wanted Rav Moshe to give him a hashkama that you have to, I guess, that you have to buy my whiskey. You know, come out and say that you need a hashgacha on whiskey. And Rav Moshe wrote that very strongly, that he thinks that it's mutter, that you don't require hashgacha. And he writes, and he says, it's wonderful that you're writing hashgacha. Okay, but he feels that there's me'ikar hadin, there's no need. You cannot tell people that they must buy specifically this whiskey. And he writes here again, on the fourth one, kibalti mechtelo hayakar b'dvar hayesh blended shetachat hashkachato, it's been blended, shlo b'tarato, yam b'glis, without any wine, any glycerin. V'ani omel yishukoh, l'zeh, she'u l'madrin, nizayim midvarim shetirich horat chacham. But Moshe mentions here an idea, and this is a specific idea of kashrut, which you don't have so much by other issues. And that is, the Gemara has something that is kind of the Gemara talks about Yechezkel. There is, Yechezkel talks, he was told in one of his nevuos to eat something which is very disgusting. And he turns to Hashem and he says, look, my mouth is clean and pure, and how do you make me, why do I really have to do this? This is the point that Hashem was trying to show him that he was Tanan of the Korban, As he was Yecheskel, in a certain sense, through his actions, was supposed to simulate Israel to a certain extent in the Golas. And he talks about my mouth, my mouth wasn't defiled in any way. It's sort of a strange way. Every Jew is supposed to make sure his mouth isn't defiled. So the Gemara explains what Yecheskel was saying, or he says, Bamash, ha-ha, Shem Elokim. From the time I was a little kid, I never ate treif. Everyone who was raised would expect not to eat treif. So the Gemara says, what does that mean? That a lot of times you have meat which the animal is about to die. So they quickly run to the shochet to shecht it before the animal drops dead. Okay, or you have another animal which had a serious shayla, and they checked it, and the Rav Paskin, that is mutter. So Yecheskel was saying that I was careful not to eat from this kind of meat, even though it was mutter, right? And again, it's not a question of something mutter, something else. It's mutter, right? The animal hasn't died yet. You can still shecht it, right? The animal, the Rav Paskin, that is mutter. However, we find, this is which I don't know that we find that much in other areas of kashrus, but we find in other areas of halacha, but there is this concept in kashrus of something which we find that based on the Sigmar by Yecheskel, certain issues which are getting into or very close to questions or very close, it's almost straight, there is a certain amount of degree of avihidur, and that's for people who are very careful not to do so. And so that perhaps may also explain a little bit, so I was sort of bothered, again, you point out Rav Moshe, if he says the milk is certainly allowed, what's his issue here? If he's so convinced that he says it's something which is mutter, l'chule alma, right, that this is something that you shouldn't rely about, then what is the issue that, so part of it, maybe this issue of particular by kashrus is because we ingest it, because it becomes such a part of our being. And therefore we try to be extra careful even on things that may have a good solid basis, but there still is a basis to be careful about it. When it comes here to this, that's what he mentions the Rish, that Ha'atzach Ha'achacham quotes Rama, and he says, Ivani, Afshani Matir, and again with Moshe about the blended whiskey, the same thing. He says, I hold it, it's Mutter. And therefore, he says, and didn't want, he refused to tell Rav Tanya, that people have to buy his whiskey. But again, Ani Basmi, that's how Mishnah talks. I usually don't drink the splendid whiskey because he himself, he's careful for himself. Rak b'chabura, when I'm in a group, shelo lemechte kiyuara, when I don't want to look like a big shot, I want to look like I'm being more mach than everybody else, I want to be obvious. Hayitu shetem mashu levarecham nesubim kanahug, I drink something to make a lechayim with everybody else, therefore it's a wonderful thing to happen. Okay, and therefore again it continues, he has a whole discussion, he says that's why it's mutter, and everyone relies on it, even Rabbanim, and there Chas V'Shalom said it is there, okay, but it's mutter, Nevim, once again, the Ledina, Ababa Nefesh, Yishlachna, Atzma, Mitzat, Kamach, HaShashot. So again, we see this constant flood in terms of Rav Moshe, where he told many, many things are mutter, and therefore it's mutter, and many, many good Jews use it, and therefore a person who does so is fine. And shouldn't in any way be looked down upon. A person who's doing so is keeping kosher. However, Rav Moshe points out that whether it be for various reasons, whether it be in terms of the fact that there still may be certain questions, or maybe the fact as far as the chinuch, or as far as the special zehirus that we find in Yecheskel, okay, there is certainly justification for a person to be more careful. However, if we view it as a chumrah, a person has to put things in perspective, and this is where particular issues in terms of other people, in terms of guests, in terms of neighbors, comes up. Because when you talk about one of my rabbis, Rav Mordechai Willig, would always say every chumrah is a kula. And that was his expression. You have to know every chumrah is a kula, right? Because a person wants to be more masculine, say, for example, in kashrus, for example, he's going to buy some more expensive chicken, okay, so he can buy more, right? So that means more of the budget is going to food. That means he'll have less money available to either do tzedakah or to do other issues or to, right? Or he'll have to spend more time working. Okay, it's going to come at a certain cost. Okay, if something comes up, if something comes up, and a person wants to be more on Shabbos, or he wants to or in doing so he's going to eat a certain thing, and therefore he won't be able to be at his neighbors as frequently, or he will avoid being in contact with other people in work who he might possibly injure. A person always has to balance, or in terms of person, in terms of within the family, right? The person's going to be more machmer or something. I mean, again, every chumrah has its cost in terms of, whether it be in terms of personal relationships or in terms of there are other financial costs or whatever other costs are going to be. And a person has to, if it's a chumrah, then a person has to know how to balance it in a way that he's not going to give off on something else. Let's say there's a famous story at the Briskers, who was people, you know, are known to be big machmirim. When it comes to pikuach nefesh and Shabbos, and they'll go all out this right away, and any Shabbos they'll go drive whatever has to it. Right? So someone said, why are you so machmir? Why are you so mekel here? So we're not mekel. We're machmir and pikuach nefesh. Okay. So in a certain sense, and a person has to realize sometimes that we talk about this mitzvah kashas, the mitzvah be adam la makom. There's also mitzvahs bin adam l'chaveru. Right? A person who very often, certainly in the sense of the neighborhood, a person can decide that he wants to be machmir, he wants to be scrupulous when it comes to mitzvahs bin adam l'chaveru. And if a person is going to be careful, he's not going to want to, if something comes up, he's going to possibly insult either his family or his neighbors or so. So then in a certain sense, that's being careful in one direction. On the other hand, it's being mekel on the b'nei l'chavero aspect, and therefore a person who has to try to find a balance, that he is being careful. Again, if he wants, as I said, he's allowed to rely, and there's nothing wrong with relying on regular kashrus. But if a person wants to be more careful, he's going to people where even the basic kashrus issues are questionable. A person has to be careful that he is not, in a sense, violating the other l'chaveru. Yeah.
The other l'chaveru is when you have
mechzei kiyura. It can. Sometimes it's mechzei kiyura, and sometimes in terms of it, and sometimes even, for example, sometimes also in issues of parents it comes up a lot. Okay. So for example, I know there was a sort of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach in particular is very well known for this. The person he knew, Shneur Avreich, was very machmir not to carry on Shabbos. Alright, so what would he do? Even though it was an Erev, he went on Erev, so what would he do? He'd give his father the Erev, when he would come home from Shul, so he'd give his father the talis and the siddur to take home for him, because he, some of them, got furious at him. Okay, you're trying to be machmir on the sheet of the Rambam of this, and the Erev, and because of that, you're basically giving your father the message that, you know, he's quote-unquote your Shabbos guy. Okay? So to be machmir for this sheet, you're violating the outright mitzvah, kibbut aveim. And if one terms of, and again, in terms of neighbors or other people or other relatives, and therefore what's often said, and this is also a very important rule of thumb, is that if there are situations of relatives or of close neighbors who will be offended, if there is a shita to rely upon, if they're basically keeping kosher, then a person can rely on that, and a person should be careful about the Be'al HaChavero in a certain sense, more so than this. There was a story someone told me that the Yehuda of Echim Karim B'Yavne, that he was invited once to Pesach, where generally people are more careful, to one of his neighbors who was basically of the very minimal standard of kashrus, but he was very, very close to these people. They had invested a tremendous amount of in terms of his development, and he was very hesitant whether he should go or he should not go to them for Pesach. And he ended up discussing with one of the Be'im who went to speak with the Fincha Scheinberg, and when he told him the stories, and he said to the Fincha Scheinberg, I would go. He said, I would go. And sometimes, even though obviously he was would have liked to have his own say there, where he could do all his whatever he do him, but he's telling that in this situation, it would be the appropriate thing to do. Would be to go. If there are situations which I'm going to stop in a minute, some things, which for example, say number 7, we talk about a cafeteria, there are certain situations in which a person does come up on a routine basis, okay, where a person encounters something not on a regular day. In this situation, the best thing to do would be to either speak with the Mashkiach or get me the Mashkiach phone number, and to find out, because I know from experience a lot of times, even a place which is not Mahajan, but a lot of times it depends if the Mashkiach does his job right. If the Mashkiach does his job right, then many times you can eat there and it's on a pile because you find that this is fine, this is fine, it's fine, it does this, okay, and then maybe one or two things and they tell you, no, this might be kedai to, this meat might be kedai to avoid. Okay, in general, chickens are usually less of an issue than in terms of the meat. I would sometimes also, again, I can't, you know, some people, things that are doused with full of leafy greens and, you know, big lettuce salad, a place where the mashgiach is there only on a small amount of time, if this is how it takes time to wash lettuce, you know, from the house, takes time. So again, a place which is, in which you use a mashgiach does not seem to be there that frequently, I would perhaps, again, I can't say it's required, the mashgiach is there and does check, and they do buy, you know, a lettuce-free insect in almost all places here. But again, as a rule of thumb, in a place where you're net less sure about, I would try to avoid things that are doused with all kinds of green, with all kinds of leafy greens, because I just don't know how much time the Mashiach is going to have to properly wash each lettuce. If he's there for a short time, it's going to be harder. So again, a person needs to have a certain amount. But again, if this is something which comes up, a person has something which he encounters on a regular basis, it's best to speak to Mashiach. Just said, ask me, give me the number, I'll speak to the Mashiach. And you may find out that there may be no problem at all eating there, even for someone who does want to necessarily be careful. In any case, as I said, the final point, I just want to end with one thing from Moshe Feinstein, and this is again, you know, sometimes ask, you know, just tell me, yes or no, you know, can I eat there or not eat there? So I'm going to ask the tshuva of Moshe, the Igros Moshe in the middle, says about cream cheese, okay? There are certain kulos, and we talk about it in terms of Chav Yisrael, there are certain kulos we have by cheese more so than by milk. And if you rely on Rav Moshe's tshuva, then there's no problem bechlal, because you assume everything is okay. But if a person does not use Chav Yisrael, only use Chav Yisrael, so there are certain people who are won by milk, and that's, let's say, the Rabbanut. The Rabbanut in Israel won't allow liquid milk, but they will allow milk powder, and they will allow cheeses that are not Chav Yisrael. The question is, what about cream cheese? Is cream cheese, is it a cheese? Okay, or is it, because it's very soft, isn't it? So Moshe says, it's about cream cheese. In Yeshu, they say, gvinot akum. It's a problem of gvinot akum. Yeshu tamim lahatir, shlolach shiz a gvina, shnatelach shiz a cream. Right? If he wants to have shu, because should we consider as cheese or not? Shlolach shiz a, right? Vinkin hubidin chema, right? Butter is allowed, cheese not. So it's good. Is it milk? Is it, do you consider it cheese, or do you consider it butter? Rosh says, I can't. I don't want to prosecute on this issue. It's a very tight call, right? How do we draw the line between butter and cheese? Okay? So, again, this is not everything. I just want to end with on this point, that certain things, it's very hard to be able to give a very clear, definitive stuff. As we find out, Rosh here says, he doesn't want to say lo isa for lo hetter, even though we saw Moshe had no problem in terms of many other issues taking a very clear stance. But there are certain points, there's a certain point where it's very hard for the Rav. In this situation, Moshe said, look, tov la'achmir, if possible. But again, I can't, other people, you shouldn't, if people are doing it, you can't necessarily tell them they're doing something wrong. And of course, it has to be taken within the circumstances, and it depends on the time and the place and the person. And all this has to be balanced at the same time to try to be careful with issues of kashrus, yet at the same time to make sure that we are as careful as well with bin adam lachaber. I said, if anyone wants to discuss on a particular, you know, a particular family situation or in terms of their own home, they're trying to set it as those who are new in Israel are trying to join the two kashrus and therefore trying to set up what standards they should is appropriate for them, I'd be happy to talk to anyone on a personal level or any other issue, you know, please feel free. That's what we're here for. And
I want to understand, if there's a poor person, does the general guideline say kashrut klali is good enough for you, or is kashrut klali not good for a poor person who is religious? Okay,
again, so this is a financial consideration, certainly are a factor, in terms of, again, so in terms of, but in terms of milk and in terms of other stuff, it doesn't make, usually doesn't make much of a difference, but it comes up mostly in terms of chicken and meat, and here again, obviously, there is room to say that a person who does not, that his body, he really just has no way, then he can rely on the kashrut kalit. In terms of that, there are a certain basic level in terms of meat and in terms of chicken. The basic, there are, it is possible, it's on a pragmatic level, okay, there is possible to get, in most places, a certain minimal mahajan, which is almost the same price as otherwise. But again, but if the situation is really such, or it turns out that a person normally tries to be mafan on a higher standard, but it's just for this, it's too much for him. Mm-hmm. So again, let's say for example, the Avichim here in Torah Sakhaim, they don't go for the highest, you know, for the highest kashriyot in meat and chicken, because it's not affordable for them. And as Avichim, they can't do that, and therefore they go for specifically for a middle range, not for the highest level, because of financial consideration. But again, to that would mean they'd have to either learn less, or they'd have to go more to work, or otherwise would have.
About the ekshur, I had a lot of things about sometimes very good ekshur, but it's not a true, not a real tilda.
Oh, I'm very glad you mentioned that. Okay, I have to. I just there's an email out today that Mitzvah Hashem on Sunday night, Achil Spiro will be speaking here at the Matnas. Okay, from Jewish Roshanut. Merkazi. Okay, I'm sorry. Merkazi. Highly recommended for everyone to participate. Okay, and he'll discuss a lot about this issue. I know a lot about this issue of fake tudot. Okay, this goes back to the question.
Sometimes the mehadin are the more problematic because they're
more right. Coffee. So what you're going to see is that he will discuss a lot about fake tudot, expired tudot, false tudot, and tudot of kashriyot agencies that don't exist.
Cancel tudot.
Okay, right. So means that I would very much leave for that discussion because he's an expert in that particular area, and feel free, of course, to ask him other questions and. We'll follow up, Mitzvah, in the coming weeks. We'll discuss, I'd like to give a basic overview of some of the common hashlachot and some of the local eateries, and then we'll move on to the specific topics within kashrut. Ben?
Yeah, in terms of, it seems like we really have to do a lot of the legwork ourselves. If you find a restaurant that has a regular kashrut, and you typically follow the hajjim, so you have to ask a lot of questions. Speak to the mishkiach, maybe have you speak to the mishkiach, somebody you rely upon, speak to the mishkiach to find something new.
Okay, again.
How is it reliable also?
Right. How?
You have to talk to the mishkiach on the phone, that's how it is.
Personally, I don't know how comfortable I would be walking into an establishment and saying to the person who's behind the counter, by the way, can you give me the number of the mishkiach? Or can you answer a few questions about the kashrut? Is that...
Okay, so there are a few on there. It's a very good point. So again, that's why, in a certain sense, theoretically, even within whatever hashgacha on whatever level, right, there are always better mashgichim, worse mashgichim, more reliable establishments. You have some age, some organization, some place of that are under the best hashgachas. And yet you'll find some people who are behind the scenes, you know, at this particular place, they won't eat in because even though it has the top hashgacha, they know the particular mashgiach and know that there are problems going on there, and they won't. It happens throughout. We can't, you know, we are not, you know, we don't deal with this day in, day out. And therefore, in a sense, that's why we have the hashgachas, and therefore, you know, at a statistical level, we assume that the, you know, hashgachas, generally speaking, will be more careful and, you know, get each one with the full gamut of level. And in a certain sense, this is also goes back to the what we mentioned before, that a person who goes out more, who eats out more frequently, okay, would probably do better off to find certain local eateries where he would like to frequent. Okay, because if, let's say, for example, let's say I'm just taking out there, for example, there's a 5% chance that there will be a problem in one eatery, whatever. Okay, so if you're going out once, the laws that still happen on that day with the 5%. But if you, on a day-to-day basis, right, every week you go out, okay, so the course that you will chance upon a problem, again, statistically, grows. And therefore, certainly a person who does go eat out often, okay, so again, so hopefully if in those situations, especially I would recommend a person who's eating out of the house, okay, should try to find either a more mahajan or a place where it seems that the balabayis is interested in kashrus, not only as a, you know, as something forced on him in order to get customers, but he does care about kashrus. Okay, but a person who goes to frequent would do better to would do well to try to find, to identify specific places that he has checked on a case by case situation, and to know that he frequents these five restaurants and they have been specifically checked, and you know that the hashgacha there is a generally reliable hashgacha. Yes, definitely. We can't always do that. Okay, but there have been times that, for example, you know, we've had issues, we've been invited to family simchas. Yes, I call up an agency and I say, hello, my name is Mayor Orlean from whatever. I would kind of speak to the mashgiach. It also, by the way, doing so gives the message to the establishment when you call up and you say that you'd like to speak to the mashgiach. Okay, it also gives a message to all you ask, you know, what hashgacha are you under, and can I please speak to the mashgiach? It also has a hidden message to the owner of the establishment that there are people who are potentially customers who care about the hashgacha and to take the hashgacha more seriously. Right? So there's no need to feel the, obviously the first time you do it, like anything else you do the first time, you feel uncomfortable, but it's not something that you have to feel uncomfortable about, and it carries with it a certain benefit. Okay.